Welcome to the Deeks.ai podcast, where Wake Forest innovators unpack the real-world magic of artificial intelligence through candid conversations. I'm Michael Ferrari.
I'm Ryan Scholl.
Please join us as we explore how artificial intelligence is transforming work across campus, one fascinating story at a time. Get ready to discover the human side of technological innovation.
Juan Hernandez, Wake Forest professor of practice, lives a double life. In his day job as an industry head of artificial intelligence, he uses AI to produce results, drive market strategy, and spark productivity through ideation and eliminating meetings. In his part-time gig, he shapes the minds of the new up-and-coming business elite by guiding them toward knowledge self-acquisition, his secret AI superpower, retrieval augmented generation.
This is Deeks.ai, the number one higher ed artificial intelligence podcast at Wake Forest University. Or at least I hope it is. We'd like to thank all of our listeners. Our listen count has reached stratospheric levels lately, and not only are our fellow Deeks tuning in, but our humble little show has broken out of the walls of Wake Forest, my guess is through the tunnels, and reached listeners all over the world. Now, that could potentially just be due to my sister, but hey, we've gone international, so I want to thank everybody who's tuning in. But enough of me self-aggrandizing about the show. Michael, you have anything you want to say about our show?
No, just that I got recognized the other day for doing it, but it was someone we work with, so it wasn't impressive though. They just didn't know it was me doing it.
But we're not on video, so how did they recognize you?
My voice, I guess. Oh, they're like, wait, nice. I know that voice.
And this is somebody we work with?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Like, wait, that's you? I'm like, yep.
It's probably because you're using AI to create the voices, huh?
You never know.
All right, so we actually have a guest today too. Our guest is Juan Hernandez, who wears multiple hats, which is an interesting perspective and why we wanted to talk to him. He is a professor of practice in the School of Professional Studies in the digital marketing area, but he's also head of artificial intelligence at sort of Sales Factory, which is a local company that does data-driven market strategies for companies. So Juan, I'm very interested in your experience with those two worlds and how those relate. Now, but it's also important to know that Wake Forest does a great job of hiring its own, and you are an alum of the business school, so definitely want to recognize that part. One question I have before we start, and only because somebody actually asked me this the other day, and so I'm just going to ambush you and ask you directly right now, what is a professor of practice?
Well, basically, it's a part-time job, right, where you teach, where you learn at work. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
I like how you are able to bridge that academic theory with real world practice. So the students get to learn from people who are in the real world. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do with Sales Factory?
Yeah, I feel the pressure now that we are talking to the international audience. this is actually my second stint at Sales Factory. Like you said, you know, when I graduated from my MBA at Wake Forest in 2011, came to Sales Factory to basically bring the marketing research practice in-house. And I did that for almost 6 years. Then I went away, worked at Amazon and Reynolds, and then came back and basically, you know, copy and paste, but now with AI. So I'm helping the company to grow through implementing AI in marketing. And the moat that we have here is the company has done, Sales Factory has done bi-weekly research studies about anything and everything that's happening with the US consumer. So the idea is to take AI and create a moat, and you know, so we can leverage all those insights, all that great knowledge that we have about the consumers, the US consumers. So we created a marketing assistant that allows you to ask questions like, you know, what type of consumers can care about this product? Who should I target for that product? How should I sell it? What are the main benefits? So instead of hallucinating the most, you know, that's kind of what you would get with a regular GPT or regular Gen AI tool. We ground the the answers based on all the knowledge that we have from the consumer insights. And so,
where do you get that knowledge?
Does that
come from the companies internally, or is that your own market research?
Yeah, no, it's everything, right? Because if you think about company knowledge as a whole, right? 90% of that knowledge is going to be unstructured data. Basically, that means it's a PDF, it's a Word doc, maybe a bunch of emails, things like that, right? So, and that's always been the challenge for the analytics teams or the consumer insights teams. Like, you don't have access. I mean, organizing a lot of data is really painful, but that's the other thing. Like with AI, people think like it's just the gen AI models, but it is the data science side of things. And so we're leveraging vector databases that allow us to basically take a PDF, ingest it, and make that available to the model. So when you ask a question, we go check our database, and anything that's relevant to your question, we attach it to the model and ask the model to answer a question based on the context we provided. So to answer your question specifically, what we do is, like I said, every other week we go out and ask consumers about current stuff, tariffs, Epstein files and things like that, and how that can potentially, affect your consumption or change your behaviors. And we put that in the database. So when you ask questions about like how can tariff affect consumptions on my category, then we'll have some data on that, and the LLM answer will be grounded or fact checked based on the insights that we have.
So this is not just static data. You are continually updating the data as well. So it's, I wouldn't maybe say it's real time, but it is more up to date than what the LLM may have at a cutoff training date.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And in case we don't get anything from our database, that's kind of where, all of the development we have, if we deem that the data that we have on our vector database is not relevant to answer your question, we'll go out and do a web search to provide at least some grounding from what we find on those web searches.
What size companies are you working with?
I mean, it's so all over the place. We're just getting started, so we're not very selective on the kind of clients we want, right? We just want clients to get started. Because the problem with this is you can probably fine tune it or adapt it to work with anything, any manufacturer that you can think of. But that's a challenge, right? Because then you would not be strategic about how you grow your business. So because we are kind of a sister, I mean, technically speaking, I work for SalesFactory. I know SalesFactory, but it's the same owners. I just have some shares on SalesFactory AI. So, so what we're trying to do is kind of work with the same kind of clients, which is home improvement industry, any manufacturer that sells stuff, products to Home Depot and those. Basically, that's how you can think of. That's kind of the kind of companies we're targeting at the beginning. But of course, like I said, once we get the results, where we get the momentum going, we can adapt it to basically any type of businesses.
It seems like one of the benefits of a lot of this artificial intelligence wave lately is allowing even the smaller companies to scale up and compete with the bigger companies. So I was wondering if part of your strategy may be to allow some of these less number of employee companies to really be on a level playing field with some of the bigger ones.
Yeah, I know, if you think about, everybody talk about like having a purpose for your business, and that's lately has spurred some discussion about purpose brands. But I think at the business level, it's good to have a purpose. And yes, I'll tell you the story. I actually have a degree on computer science. So early in my career, when I was, years and years ago, when I was turning in a project, my project was working on my peers was not working, and I just started chatting with people, and I just learned that it was just because there was a simple way to do things and there was a more complicated way to do things. And for whatever reason, people, all my friends went with the, or my classmates went with the more complicated because it was cooler to do it that way. And so, you know, when I started talking to folks about AI, you know, they just started dropping, you know, deep learning, machine learning, all those things are very, very scary for people that don't understand them. And so I'm
thinking,
they're
scary for the people who understand them too.
Exactly, right? Skynet and all of that stuff. And so I mean, I think, like, why you want to make things on purpose? And I think that the reason is because you want to look smart, I guess. So that's kind of the main thing, the main idea about our business is, you know, technology doesn't require complexity. It requires clarity, right? So that's our thing. That's our kind of the why we build these companies, to make it simple. So, you know, when I talk about AI, I don't try not to mention any stuff like deep learning, machine learning, any of that. So in our case, if you think about marketing, the current LLMs probably do 90% of the job you need them to do for marketing purposes, right? Any foundational model, frontier for that matter. So why would you want to spend, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to fine tune, to train, to whatever one model to get that 10%, right? So, okay. So that's why we implemented this technology, the RAG technology, the RAN pattern that I mentioned earlier, that it's kind of bypasses the need to fine tune your model to provide accurate answers based on your business. So yes, in that way, we make it accessible. We make it easy to implement, right? You don't have to wait months to train your model. You basically, what we need to do is send me all your PDF, send me all your Word docs, send me all your Excel files, and we load them up on our vector database, and then you're ready to go. So that's kind of the motto, is just keep it simple, make it accessible. So that, you know, that basically allows to have a subscription-based pricing model that will cost less than having, you know, one full-time analyst on your payroll.
Okay, let's jump over to the classes you're teaching. First, describe a little bit about those classes, and then maybe about how you're using your industry experience to develop some of the activities you're doing in the class.
Yeah, so I'm teaching basically the same class in two schools. I'm teaching marketing research on the undergrad, which is a 15 weeks active this fall. So I'm actually going to start teaching in about a month again. And then I teach a version of it on SPS, which is only an 8-week course. So it's a kind of simpler version of that class. And it's completely online. The other one is on site. So again, since I started working with AI, I'm thinking like AI can play a role here to enhance the learning experience. So I started playing with developing an AI tutor that only answers questions. Well, I'll get to back in a minute. That only answers questions based on the course materials. So I load up the syllabus, all the assignments, everything, all the readings, everything there. So, you know, a student can actually ask simple questions as, what should I do to get ready for, you know, week one, right? And it will tell you like, what are the assignments, what are the readings to do for that week? Or it can be something specific like, you know, can you explain me, or, you know, what is market segmentation? And the one thing I want to say about going back is, when I say answer, you know, again, we play with the prompts to make sure that the model actually doesn't give you an answer. It guides you to find the answer. So for instance, if you ask, what is a market segmentation? It will say something like, okay, I know like you want to learn about or understand what a market segmentation is. Can you start telling me what do you understand about it? So he guides you.
So that is a really interesting concept. Cool. And it's mm-hmm. something that a lot of these educational tools are starting to build in. A lot of people have equated it to the Socratic method. With your tools that you're talking about, how do you stop a student from just going out to Gemini or ChatGPT or Claude and asking that same question and then just getting that direct answer?
That's interesting too, because then it stops the issue where if it's pulling from external sources, if it just gets a bad source. So I think that's actually a pretty interesting approach as well.
Yeah. So to your first question, I don't think you can stop them, to be honest. And, you know, hopefully, you know, at Wake Forest, we have the owner code and people follow it to the letter. So if you ask them to get that information or to go about learning using your tool rather than just going to ChatGPT or Claude or whatever, I think that's, you know, up to the student. I think, you know, based on my experience, I think the at the undergrad level, for sure, I think most students have a hunger for learning. So I think if we as faculty emphasize, if you use this tool, you will actually learn. Whereas if you use this other tool,
and that's something we've talked about before. What is the student's desire, or why are they incentivized to be here? What is it, learning or just getting a degree? And we hope that a lot of our students, because we have such rock star students, are here to actually learn the material. So I do kind of agree with you, and I would also wish and hope that students want to learn the material and just use the tools that you're providing to augment their learning experience.
Yeah, I mean, to me that's the key thing, right? Augmenting the thing, because I mean, we always try to be there to the students, but you know, either send a note or something is going to take some time back. So having a tool that allows them to go quickly and ask questions and get them back to get them started, I mean, that would make the entire experience better, I would think.
So let's talk about the mechanics of what you've built a little bit here. As you said, it leads the students through a process, leads them to their end goal, but doesn't directly provide the answer. How did you build that?
It's basically, again, we use this, it's called, for the technical point of view, it's called RAG pattern. And basically what you do is, if you think about...
And that's retrieval augmented generation, right?
Yes. Okay. So basically what you do is kind of put a middleman between the user query and the LLM. So what that middleman does is when you ask a question, it first runs a search on the database to see what content is relevant to your question. And based on that, attaches chunks of documents, the relevant documents, and say, tell exactly to the LLM, answer this question only using this content. If the content is not relevant to answer the question, then say, reach your faculty or something like that, because that material does not cover on the class. So that's point number one. The second thing is,
what model does it go against to answer the questions?
We can use whatever, but right now we are using 4.0.
Okay.
Yeah, we, you know, on our marketing assistant tool, we have DeepSeek, we have Claude, and we have GPT. So we can use any.
Okay.
To be honest, what I'm seeing is this tutor, the requirement for a tutor is not the highest. So you can probably go with most models and it will do a good enough job. So the second way about how to make the LM behave as a tutor is really prompt engineering. We work for a while on a prompt that really got the the answer the way we want it. So, you know, it's your traditional stuff, you define the role. So, and then we have specific instructions like your goal is to guide and the user to find the answer and to provide a great experience, not to give them the answer immediately. So the agent, the model really understands that really well and does a good job on follow those instructions. And the good thing so is...
You brought up one term that I want to give a shout out to our sponsors because information systems pays our bills. You've talked about prompt engineering, and we have an excellent class on prompt engineering. If you just go to the artificial intelligence website at, for information systems, you'll find a class on prompt engineering. So that's going to relate directly to what Juan says, and that's what pays our bills. So back to our show.
Yeah, that's good. And I mean, you know, just I'll add something else about prompt engineering. The one example I like to say, like in my case, you know, if I were to ask, you know, a children of like a 3 years old children to watch my cleats since I play soccer, right? If I ask a 3 years old to watch my cleats, you know, anything and everything can happen, right?
You are brave.
Yes. I mean, it can be, you may find them in the dishwasher, right? You may find them in the washer, but if you say to that 3 years old, you know, hey, here's a bucket, here's a scrub, here's the soap, please watch my shoes or my cleats, then, I mean, things can happen still, right? But it's going to be, the output is going to be, the result is going to be much closer to what you need. So that's kind of what I always give this advice or this analogy, like think about like a 3 years old and give as much context as you can and you'll have more good success. Advice.
So I've noticed that with the two stories you've told, with Sales Factory and from your class, you've talked about the data, which seems very important, and you've used the same strategy of RAG to, rather than fine-tuning a model, you are grounding the queries basically in your source data. So that is a really cool technique that you can use these base models, which have presumably all the knowledge of the world, but they don't have that hyper-specific knowledge that may not be publicly available data. But through the retrieval augmented generation technique, you can actually keep your own data private to you, but still allow your users to query that data and get the responses from it.
Exactly. Yeah, I think, you know, one of the biggest things that changed in the last 12 months or 18 months is the window context. I'm saying it right?
Window.
Yeah, I said it. Yeah, it sounds like weird. So I'm like, what? I said wrong. So yeah, the context window, right? Before, you know, you on the at the beginning, you could only feed like 10 pages worth of content there. And you started noticing how the model kind of forgot what you talked about it before. Now that's not the case, right? If you look at Gemini, it has like, I don't know, a million
tokens. Insane. That's insane. How big Gemini's context window is.
Yeah. So, you know,
you can basically put a couple books in there and it will remember.
So, you know, that's a great thing for, you know, prompt engineering everything, right? You can also now add more context. Of course, now the issue is like, you know, and that's kind of what RAG does very well. Because you know, if you're gonna attach, you know, PDFs every time you drop you write a query or every time you ask a question, then, you know, you're going to spend a lot of time going through your files, right? So, and yeah, God knows we spend too much time looking for emails and old files. So, you know, again, given that we have now larger content windows, and I'm sure they're going to keep getting bigger and bigger until they can, you know, they will be unlimited basically. So, you know, again, in our spirit, on our going back to our value of keeping everything simple, and before we hit, you know, super intelligence, right? We can use this RAG model that, or this RAG pattern that allows to, you know, get 90, 8%, 95% or what we want to do without, again, incurring biggest cost of fine-tuning models and stuff like that.
And by doing that, you don't have to submit that information or data to these big, huge models.
Yeah, no. No. We avoid that as, you know, as hard as we can.
Can you give a specific example of an assignment or a task that you give to your students that they have to use some of these tools?
Yeah, and actually it's, you know, that's something that I'm kind of thinking, because I mean, to me, this is going to be, it's going to be impossible to figure out an assignment where you're sure that the effort is going to rely 100% of the students, right? I mean, there's so many ways they can use AI that you cannot control that. So I'm doing two things about that. So first, I'm kind of rethinking my rubrics. And again, I'm in the process right now of doing that, because I want to add like an originality factor to the answers. Because, ooh, you know, like one of my assignments is finding what are the consumer-centric initiatives that on Airbnb. They do a lot of cool stuff. I mean, I give you a quick note on that. If you look at the Airbnb logo, it's actually a pretty complex logo. It's pretty cool. So the shape is kind of the same shape you get on the GPS, like the location shape, like, you know, the dot. Huh. And then, you know, like it's got like a weird scribble. And that's actually somebody doing like this, because the business is about people. So it's people and places. So, I mean, they have all sorts of cool stuff where
now I'm going to have to really pay attention next time I look at that.
Yeah. Take a look at it and you're going to just like, wow, this is, I mean, it's one of the best logos out there. People have, you know, they won a lot of prizes. But anyway, so my assignment is about find me like, what are the three most impressive, you know, consumer-centric activities a company do. What I mean by consumer-centric is how they take consumer insights to, you know, to create marketing strategy, to drive their marketing strategy. So, you know, when I did last time, a lot of answers came back similar. So what I'm thinking is students got, you know, put back the first time, the first thing they found. So now I'm thinking, you know, okay, just to make them or to motivate them to work harder and kind of scratch the surface, adding a originality factor. Like if the thing you talk about, not other students talked about, then that's going to be a plus. That's going to give you a higher grade. So that's one factor. The other thing is a cool example that we did, you know, the story, and this is actually the guy invented the Dustbuster. That's the whole story about Self-Factory AI. Okay. Jets that Mr. King, he worked at Black & Decker, and he brought to market, or he was the lead or the leader of the project that brought the Dustbuster into market. And that's, you know, the most successful pro launch in Black & Decker. And some people argue that this is ever in the U.S. market, because, you know, that allowed them to grow and buy the world and a bunch of stuff, and until they went sideways. But anyway, that process took them 3 years back in the day. A lot of research, talking to people, creating prototypes. And mm-hmm. So one thing I do in my class is going through that process in 20 minutes using AI tools.
Wow.
Because you can go to ChatGPT and, you know, what examples we say, we give in like three categories, like a lawnmower, a vacuum, and we let them ask questions about. So the whole thing is, okay, go learn about consumer trends in those categories. Based on that, pick one that you think is unmet. Then you can ask these models how this kind of product can solve that need. And then, you know, you can go to Claude or Gemini and ask to create a video for the prototype, or create a website. So you can create a whole thing in 20 minutes or so. So that's how kind of I bring the point of this is how things change from, you know, 40 years ago to now. You can go from something that took 3 years. And of course, it's not apples to apples, right? They were building prototypes and stuff like that. You will get here, you will get images and press releases and stuff like that. So you actually haven't built a thing. But again, that's a lot of the work they did. Again, it took them 3 years and now we can do it in 20 minutes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you hit on something that's kind of interesting. You talked about how fast you can do things and there's a huge productivity gain. You can accelerate your business. Now that's out in the professional world. Your other hat you wear in the academic world, and we're here to teach the students and help them master some subject. And there is this kind of battlefield about the AI uses. So in the academic world, we want to help students learn, but we don't want it to replace their learning. Where out in the business world, your goal is to accelerate your business. In some cases, your boss, whoever you are beholden to, doesn't care how you do it. You need to accomplish a goal, whether it comes from your brain or you're using a tool to do it. It's very different in the academic world. Mm-hmm. It seems like you have a foot in both worlds. Do you see a difference there? And how do you deal with that with the students versus your other life in the professional world?
Yeah, although, you know, I think I still see a lot of similar things going on in both sides of the field. I mean, that's kind of, you know, that's what I think I'm good at market research, kind of seeing patterns out there on behavior or data. So, you know, the first thing that while you were asking the question, you know, it reminded me, Professor Shannon McKean, I think you probably have him here. He's like really...
Yeah, he's a friend of the show. He's been a guest on it.
Yeah, yeah. One of the articles that he shared was interesting about like how AI is potentially a problem with critical thinking. How can damage basically humans and deter us to think critically ever again? And to be honest, I feel like that's a good point. So on the other camp, I actually heard an interview to the NVIDIA CEO. I forgot his name.
Jensen Huang.
And he says like, you know, he finds himself using AI tools like every hour during his day. And he said he understands that query, but he also thinks like, you know, I have to ask smart questions to the LLM to get the answers I'm seeking. And how can you ask smart questions without exercising your critical thinking? Right?
That's a very good point, yes.
So, I mean, I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's going to change our brains, how our brains work, how our brains are wired. But I don't think using a tool that can augment our productivity can make us dumber. I still don't see that, or, you know, make us lazier. Because at the end of the day, you know, laziness is the mother of innovation, right? So
unless they keep making it so you can ask dumber and dumber questions with AI and it can answer it for you. So
yeah. So I see that part, and to be honest, I don't know what's gonna happen. You know, one thing I would say about AI, if somebody tells you what's gonna happen a year or 6 months from now, that person is either foolish or doesn't know what that person's talking about, because I mean everything changes so fast that think that we can predict what's going on with AI. I think it's impossible.
So I think you brought up critical thinking, and a big part of critical thinking is communication and learning how to communicate. Obviously, in the past, it's mostly been with humans, but now we have to learn how to communicate with these models. And there's a whole theory about context engineering, which is a cousin of prompt engineering. You have to be able to communicate in a certain way where you get your point across, because as your story, you perfectly illustrated the story about giving your cleats to a three-year-old. Yeah. I like telling the story of asking a friend, what was the score of the game last night? If you ask that to a model, you're going to see smoke come out of your computer because they don't know what game you're talking about, what region of the world. You could be talking about Little League baseball or international cricket, and it's got no idea. So you have to provide context, and it's about that communication. So I think those communication skills are going to be incredibly important. So you have to be able to think critically through your messages. And then when you get something back, when you get a response to your query, you have to be able to continue that conversation. Yeah. Obviously, you know, as you probably know, that you know your first response is never the best one. You have to refine and iterate and continue the conversation, almost like you would with a human. So I think those communication skills are going to be a big part of going forward, how we work with whatever the models or tools or whatever this next iteration of artificial intelligence is.
I totally agree. You know, I just jokingly, I just saw something that happened to me yesterday. You know, I wish that it would be always the case where your first answer is not the best. Sometimes your first question is not it's not right, but unfortunately it's the best. Because for some reason, sometimes when you start asking follow-up questions, in some cases, like me, I was doing something like really weird. I'm kind of trying to develop a website completely by coding it. So I was trying to get Gemini to create an animation for me. The first one was this close, but I had a big problem that couldn't make it work. And I tried to fix it, and every time I tried to fix it, it just got worse.
It got further and further away.
I know that pain.
So, yeah, so sometimes, you know, the first answer is the best you get, but it's not what you were looking for. Anyway.
What are some of your favorite tools that you use, both in your class and then in your real-world job?
Yeah. And just because, like I said, I've been playing with building a website, which is something I haven't done for. Lovable AI is really good. Nice. I'm really having I think good success. You know, maybe a designer will disagree that it's a horrible website, but I like how it's coming out. You know, I still haven't figured out some pieces.
Lovable for us.
Yeah, Lovable is a tool that allows you to build user interfaces, mostly websites, but it actually you can do like just regular writing code for you.
But it's a coding assistant where you can talk to it in natural language.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I literally say, like, here's my logo. Here's the content I want on the website. Go build it. 3 minutes after, I had a pretty good draft.
Nice.
So, I mean, again, something that will cost you thousands of dollars and takes you, you know, weeks, you can get a good draft in a few hours. And even that, you know, especially, you know, since I'm in the marketing agency, and I think that's something that also I'm going to talk about in my next class, is defining what you want is really hard to a vendor, whatever your vendor is. So I think that's going to be the other big benefit of AI, is like you can actually say, can you do this for me? And by the way, here's the draft of what I'm looking for. So, you know, that's going to help so much these vendor clients relationships, because now, again, in my case, in a marketing agency, you can say, hey, I want you to build me an actual, like, real professional website. And here is what I have in mind, a fully functional website with no expert design, but it has everything I want on it. So now the agency knows, okay, I just need to make it look even better, right? So you eliminate all that back and forth of, what do you want in the product page? What do you want in the homepage? What do you want in the bio docs? That's all built in. So all you need to do is, okay, I just need to make it look pretty, look pretty air. So that's, to me, is another good thing that people are not realizing yet about AI, that's going to allow us to share draft and so communicate better. You know, you talk about communication, communicate better what we want, which is, yeah, always challenging.
Nice.
Yeah, I want to touch real quick on like what you talked about before, and it kind of ties into this, like what you were just saying about being able to get something like up and running without the back and forth. And then you touched on like 3 years worth of like effort now being truncated into like 20 minutes. Like, is that, is like from the teaching aspect and from like the professional aspect, is that like a subject that's like that time investment change that is being like looked into, you know, actively or being taught to people now entering the, you know, the professional world and stuff? Cause, you know, I feel like that's a tricky aspect that I don't hear talked about too much. You know, mm-hmm. So for instance, if in certain fields, if someone's hired to build you a deck and it's going to cost you $5,000 and they can do it in a day, or someone else can do it in like a week, either way they get the same and all that, it's incentive for them to do it quicker. But like, I'm just curious how more complex roles and different roles, especially in like what you're talking about, how that change in timeline and timeframes is like being, you know, impacted in the roles that people are taking on.
Yeah, that's such a great question. And, you know, again, I'm not involved in the agency side of the business, but, you know, that model of charging by hour, I think is going to be disrupted. Whether you're a consultant business or an agency type of business, it's going to be disrupted, right? Because again, a consultant now can do the job three times faster or something like that, right? So that means their revenue might shrink by to 25% of what it used to be if they're charging just by hour. So I think AI also is going to revolutionize the way we charge for, or business charge for their services. And so it's got to come, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen there, right? I just said I'm predicting the future is going to be hard, and I'm not going to do that. But I think, you know, somehow the pricing models will change to deliverables. And then it's up to you how much effort, how much money you spend building that. But yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And, you know, we'll see what's going to happen with that.
Gotcha.
There's that current famous story about the filmmaker who made those TV commercials for Kalshi, the prediction market site that aired during the NBA finals. He just used some of the video tools, put in, I think it was actually a couple hundred prompts, but he said it took him maybe a couple $100 in API calls in and a few hours of prompting, and he made a commercial that would have taken weeks to produce. And I don't even remember the numbers, but he got maybe 500,000 for it. He threw it out there on Twitter for everybody to see, and all the media pundits picked up on it. But it's exactly what you're saying, that he did this in a couple days, cut the time down by factors of magnitude. If he got paid hourly, he would have got nothing. So I think that's a perfect example of how that model now is going to be changing in the future.
Yeah. I mean, this is so, I don't know if that's this is a Venezuelan story or this is a global story, but it was something like, you know, machine broke down and, you know, your people is working on it. It cannot fix it. You call an expert, comes in and just, you know, tightens some bolt and passes the bill $500. Like, are you charging me $500 just to tighten this bolt? No, I challenge you $500 because I knew bolt you needed.
Exactly. That's exactly yes. What I was going to mention. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
You're paying for that knowledge.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, Juan, what is some advice that you would give, let's start with two new professors who are coming in, that want to work with the students, and I'm talking mostly about how to integrate generative artificial intelligence into their curriculum.
Yeah, I think, you know, fighting against it is not a good use of any energy. And to be honest, you know, I don't have an answer yet for it. I don't know if somebody has a full picture of it, but you gotta embrace it. And like I said, the couple of things I can think about is don't figure out different ways you wanna grade the students on how they use AI. Like, you know, think about originality. Another thing I do is also ask the students to provide the prompts they use to get the answer that, or to, you know, they use to, you know, to complete a project, and then just grade them on that too. Help them, you know, help them do better prompting, or help them, you know, avoid any pitfalls with AI, because, you know, you have the hallucination stuff that can be a big thing. But that's okay. You know, again, we are all in the process. In my case, the one thing I do is, because, you know, as you guys obviously know, English is not my first language, and so I use it. I used AI or Gen AI to help me refine my feedback, and, you know,
nice.
That helps a lot. You know, if you define your audience, you're giving feedback to students, undergrad, you know, taking this class, and your hope is to, you know, you can put your goals, whatever those are, some of them personally, then, you know, it can help me write much better detailed feedback that I could by myself. So the other thing, and this is my number one, my go-to advice about AI in general, you know, I took the Strength Finder, and one of my strengths is ideation. And, you know, Strength Finder's names, the strengths names are really misleading. Because ideation, what that means is when I talk to people, my creativity goes crazy. So now the challenge or the thing is, you know, if it was for me, I'll be in meetings all day long, because that gives me a lot of ideas about anything that I'm working. But, you know, it's also very, very wasteful. So so now I have something that I can chat with it. I can bounce ideas literally, you know, immediately and for free without bothering anything else. So you know, whatever your strength is, that's my kind of feedback. Whatever your strength is, figure out how you can use AI to make it even better, to exploit it as much as you can. So, you know, again, I'm chatting with people every now and then, and that gets my, you know, creativity running.
So that is something that is super helpful, obviously, in the marketing world. What are some other pieces of advice you'd give somebody, since your expertise is marketing, that you would use it specifically in the marketing world?
In the marketing world, I mean, again, because things are changing so fast on AI, I listen to two or three podcasts every day. One is more technical. The other one is more like people messing around with new tools. So
that anything other people would you want to share that might be worth listening to?
Yeah, I forgot the name is, because that's the one. So the one with the technical stuff is called Last Week on AI.
Okay.
That might be too technical for most people, but it's really great because they cover a lot of stuff in terms of new models, new stuff going on. They go deep into like, you know, when, for instance, when the OpenAI mess happened, they had a lot of intel about what was really happening. So you get some insight. The other one is like AI for humans. This is really fun, because it's like literally two guys messing up with these new tools, and they just kind of give you an honest review on the tool. So, you know, you can learn about like music generation tools or video generation tools, like all those stuff. So that helps you kind of discover. And yeah, and that's, I mean, that's only thing, like, you know, I think if you're a teacher, you're a geek. You know, that's why I'm a teacher, because I always like to learn more stuff. So, I mean, AI is changing rapidly. So you just need to spend some time to start to keep up with it.
Good luck with that.
Sounds about right.
Okay, Juan, well, we don't want to take up any more of your time. So I want to say thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to be here. Happy to for you guys to consider me and giving me the opportunity. It was really fun. Yeah, I hope I get recognized like Michael did sometime.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care.
Have a good one. Take
care. Thank you for listening to the Deeks.ai podcast, where Wake Forest innovators unpack the real-world magic of artificial intelligence through candid conversations. If you would like to reach out to us with any questions or comments, please email us at deeks.ai@wfu.edu. Please continue to join us as we explore how AI is transforming work across campus, one fascinating story at a time, and as we explore and discover the human side of technological innovation.